So we are now coming to the last section, which is few additional pointers on the path of meditation, and it's called hasten slowly. We'll talk about that, I think, in a week or two. There is a whole chapter on it, but what the teacher means by hasten slowly is that one should be steady and constant in our pursuit, not get sidetracked. Goal is clear, I have to keep going. I shouldn't get sidetracked. If you do, then it slows down your progress. At the same time, there should not be an anxiety. It should not be an inner disturbance. It should be a slow, peaceful, constant progress, just as a river slowly and constantly goes towards her goal. So we need to go constantly, but steadily and slowly. That's why I say, you know, slow and steady wins the race. So the progress should not be in fits and starts. I meditate for a week and then I stop, and then I go to some classes and then I stop, and then I go to some other style of teaching, and, you know, a lot like that. Stay focused in one direction and work slowly. But on the path, there may be some progress halting ruts, some obstacles that may come. And why are there obstacles? So the saints, even the Western saints, describe this dark night of the soul. It says that just before you realize the truth, a spiritual seeker, progress is progress. And then just before he or she is to the final frontier you have to cross, comes a period of helplessness where I can't do anything and I just need to go on that side, because it's like they're just on the cusp of it and they wish, you know. And at that time, your desire cannot do much. Your desire can bring you to a point, and at that point, you just need to surrender. And okay, the Lord will now take me across on the other side. So the surrender is very important. To think that I myself can realize, I can go up to a certain point with my effort, with my meditation, with my service, with my reading, with my prayers. But then there comes a point where one then just surrenders to the Lord and says, okay, now you take me across. And the Lord, who is the one that is bringing, has brought us all the way here, given us this knowledge, definitely will help. So one has to have faith. But the teacher says that there are all pointers along the path, you know, that show you that you have been progressing. And the pointers can be, you have more peace of mind, you are more calm, you feel an inner silence, you feel in contact with that. So slowly you come to know that, yeah, I'm going in the right direction. The more you go outward, the further you get from the truth. The more you go inward, the closer you get to the truth. So that's what Jesus said, the kingdom of God lies within. So one has to search within. Now he talks about preparations. And I think in the book, he talks about a journey in the car where you have to go somewhere, a long distance drive before several days. So first of all, and it's through mountainous terrain and some of the roads are not very well marked. Of course, nowadays they have GPS, but this is talking about the good old days when we didn't and we had maps. And so first of all, you have to make preparations. Your car has to be worthy. So make sure you have a reliable car, get it serviced, oil checked. Make sure there's enough fuel, enough gas. Make sure there's gas stations along the way. You carry enough food and water and drinks. Check where are the stopping points, the hotels. So the car has to be travel worthy. Then I have to know the route. Like I said, you have a map. You can search out, okay, I can I-10, and then I take this highway and that. And then you have to have knowledge of how to fix the car. Suppose it breaks down in the wilderness. Either I should have knowledge or somebody traveling with me have some basic knowledge, how to look into some basic problems, the technical knowledge. Then I should follow signs, you know, carefully watch signs. If they say exit for this road, be prepared ahead of time and follow the signs. Don't try to take my own direction. And along the way, if I get lost and can't know my way, then I inquire. Okay, I either stop at a gas station, or maybe there is a traveler, you know, another car going, and you are stopped at a restaurant or a rest area or a gas station. You can ask somebody, you know, okay, what do you think is the right way? Am I going the right way? You know? Similarly, on the spiritual journey, what is the car? The car is our body. The body is the one that has to travel. And so the body has to be prepared. And people think, if I fix the body, everything will be okay. And so we do a lot of time in fixing the body, making things comfortable, making the body healthy, making the body happy, taking care of the body and body. But taking care of the body will not take care of the problems. Taking care of the mind will take care of the body. Fixing the body will not take care of the mind, but fixing the mind takes care of the body, because the body depends on the mind for its well-being. So more important is to make sure my mind is ready. So I have the right knowledge, I have the right desire, I have the right motivation, I have the right skill. So fixing the mind, calming the mind, getting it ready, mentally making it strong for the physical journey. And then, of course, the body has to be kept healthy. That's not the point. But more important is work on the mind rather than work on the surroundings. We try to fix our surroundings to make the body comfortable. They say fix your interior, surroundings will take care of it themselves, or at least they won't affect you as much if my mind is strong. And the route where I have to go, that's given in the scriptures, whether it's the Bible or the Gita or the Guru Granth Sahib or the Quran. The scriptures give us the direction in which we should go, how to make our mind towards God. And then I should have knowledge of how to fix my equipment, just as I need to know how to fix my car. If there is any mental disorder, any mental stress, any mental, either I should have the knowledge or somebody traveling with me, means I can ask somebody, okay, I'm going through this stressful situation. Maybe I have a guru, or maybe I have a friend, a co-traveler, whom I can ask about how to fix problems in my equipment. And then signs along the way, I already talked about. Scriptures will tell you, turn your mind this way. This is how to meditate. Do some service. Do some love for God. Do some reading. So all those things. And as you read, as you progress, you will find that slowly your mind is more calm, more peaceful. I asked one time a teacher, how do I know I'm progressing spiritually? He said, things that used to bother you don't bother you anymore. That shows you are progressing spiritually. So those are the signs, and then inquire. So if I'm stuck, I feel I have been meditating, I'm not progressing, I don't think I'm getting anywhere, then you inquire. Maybe talk to a co-traveler or a friend or like a group like this. You can ask questions. If you have a guru or a teacher or a swami who comes here, you know, you can take private time from that person. So you can inquire, where am I going wrong? What is my goal? How can I go about it? So these are the means to continue the spiritual journey. And there are two aspects to the spiritual progress. One is doing. Doing is I meditate, I go to the church or to the temple, I pray, I do service, I read. That's all doing. Even meditation. Then other one is being. And being is abiding in that state of Om, state of consciousness. And even in the being, there are two aspects. Inside, I know that I am that supreme consciousness. I am that supreme being. That is my inner knowledge. But my body, mind, and intellect is still in the world. And I'm working in the world. And in the world, I cannot say I'm that supreme consciousness. Somebody asks you your name. You don't say, I am Brahman, I am the consciousness. They say, when were you born? I was never born. Are you male or female? I am beyond. You can't say that. You're applying for a passport or driver's license. You have to tell them your name, your date of birth, your sex, your occupation. So while I'm working in the world, I work as a servant of God. So when I'm working, I'm a servant of God. I'm not that infinite consciousness. That should be at the back of my mind. I am that. So then things will not bother me when things go wrong, because yeah, I'm not this body anyway. I'm not this mind. But while I'm working, I have to have the attitude of a servant of God. And those two things somehow don't seem to gel, because inside something else, outside. But sooner or later, this idea becomes powerful that by myself, I am nothing. That one has to understand. By myself, I am nothing. It's the Lord alone that is doing everything. And so I am his servant, or her servant, if you believe in the Mother Goddess. And the ultimate state of realization is the end of the ego. Because the ego, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker, this I, this little I, that thinks I am this male, I am a Indian, I live in America, in Bakersfield, I'm a citizen of the US, I am doctor, engineer, whatever. Those are all little eyes, egos. And that is the one that separates me from others and separates me from reality. When the ego merges into the Lord's presence within, that's what they say in meditation, turn the mind inward and merge it in the Lord, station it in the self. The idea that that alone I am. With that idea, when you turn the direction inward, then slowly the ego becomes weaker and weaker. And so the idea that I am a servant of the Lord also weakens the ego. Because then if I am a servant, then how can I have an ego? I am working for the Lord. I am not anybody myself. So more important is treating the mind rather than treating the body. So in the final state, there is a complete merger where the ego ends, and I become one with that reality. And then such a person's life becomes a spontaneous outpouring of love and service for the entire community. Now, what is the main rut, the main progress halting rut? And if you see in the fifth line, it is vasanas. Vasanas, as we know, are our desires arising out of incompleteness. I think I am incomplete. And by getting this object, I'll be happier, I'll be complete. Maybe if I get the next drink or the next sense pleasure or the next food or the next job or the next marriage or the next girlfriend or the next country, I'm unhappy in this country, I move. So thinking that I am incomplete, I'm looking for completeness in objects, places, or people. That this person will make me complete, this place will make me complete, this object, this job, this position, I change from one to the other. But what does all it does is vasanas create desires. Vasanas create desires that I must have this, only then I'll be happy. If I don't get it, I'll be unhappy. If I get it, I'll be happy. Talking about desires and vasanas, this creature, his teenage son didn't have any desire to do anything. He just came home, watched TV or was on his phone, just slept, did nothing, went to school, came back, had no ambition. His father used to say, what do you want to be? You know, do you want to go to college? Do you want to go to a professional school? What do you want to? Nothing, or whatever, you know, like that. She said, I need to find out what does this guy like, you know. He would talk to him, it was no use. So one day he said, and he was before he had come from school, the father, the preacher, put four objects on the table in his room, a Bible, a silver dollar, a bottle of alcohol, and a Playboy magazine, you know. She said, if he takes the Bible, that's very good, he'll be a preacher like me. If he picks up the silver dollar, that's good too, at least he'll be a businessman, successful. If he drinks the whiskey, he's going to be a drunkard. And if he opens the Playboy and looks at it, he's going to be a skirt-chasing bum. You know, he's not going to get anywhere. Let me see which of the four objects he picks up. So the boy comes from school, throws his bag here, his shoes there, you know, and doesn't put away anything. And suddenly he looks on the table, he sees four objects. So he picks up the Bible, puts it under his armpit. Takes a silver dollar, puts it in his pocket. Takes the whiskey, a big swig of the whiskey. And then the Playboy, he opens and starts looking at the centerfold. He says, oh my gosh, he's taken all four, the Bible and the silver dollar and the whiskey and the Playboy. Oh, he'll be the next president of the United States. He says, we have a next president. So, so vasanas.
The Indian comedian on YouTube.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought.
Yeah, that's very good. I think Viru or something is his name. Yeah, he has a very nice episode about President Trump. So vasanas lead to desire. And when I desire something and I don't get it, then I get angry. Oh, angry, I'm angry. And once I'm angry, then I get deluded. Then my mind doesn't think rationally. When the mind doesn't think rationally, then I do wrong things and I go in the wrong direction, and that leads to destruction. So how does the path of destruction start? With vasanas, then desire, then anger, then delusion, lock or loss of discrimination. I don't know what to think, what not to think, what is right, what is wrong. And in that process, I do things wrong and ultimately get destroyed. So that is the ladder of fall, how an individual falls from his or her higher position. So they say there are outer and inner forces that are taking us away from our goal. The outer forces are the world, you know, bringing in temptations. Whatever things tempt me, whatever things I enjoy, when I see it, my mind gets tempted. Either maybe a new dress, or maybe a new partner, or maybe a new drink, or maybe a new, you know, jewelry or a new car. So things I want to acquire. So they are outer and they make us run outside. Then there are inner forces of desire, possessiveness, selfishness. And they are more difficult to control. The outer is easier. So I have a habit of going to the mall every day and just buying useless things. I decide I'm not going to go to the mall. Why? Or I am attached to a particular sense object or a person or some desire. I can control it. Okay, if I'm alcoholic, I won't bring bottles in my house. So I won't associate with situations that bring me those. So if I have friends who like to go to the bar and drink, I'll avoid those, at least until I can overcome that. So, or if I'm a smoker, then same thing. You can slowly wean yourself off or quit cold turkey. So the outer objects you can control, but it is the inner desire that is more difficult. The mind gets tempted and it tells, come on, it's okay. You know, one drink is okay. It's okay. One smoke. It's okay. Once in a while to do something wrong. What's the harm in it? The main harm in it is that if you indulge, it's not that you're going to do anything wrong. You're just going to delay your spiritual journey. You will delay it. Yes, I'm on this path, but if I get sidetracked, say I'm going from Los Angeles to New York and I go up to Colorado, then I meet a friend. He says, come on, you know, let's stay. Why don't you stay with me a couple of weeks? Let's have fun. We'll go hunting. We'll go. You go, but your trip to New York got delayed by 2 weeks. And then you go to Chicago and there you meet an old buddy. And then you say Chicago has beautiful restaurants. So you go sightseeing and you go eating and drinking. And then you go to the mountains and, you know, again, your time is gone. You're delayed. So similarly, on the spiritual journey, there will be temptations that will come. It's not that it's the end of the world. If you give in to the temptation, it will just delay your own journey. So if you realize that if my goal is clear, then the more I stray, the more my path is, because then I have to come back. I go astray, then I have to come back. I go astray. And like this person loses 2 weeks in Denver and then loses a month in Chicago. And then in Ohio, you know, he meets a sports fan and they go to the Cavaliers games and they discuss sports and what happens? You just delay your final destination, New York. So if my final destination is realization, then I should avoid sidetracks. My goal is clear. Anything that takes me away from that, from my mind getting involved or tempted, I should bring it back. So do not get involved. So control the inner forces. And how do you control the inner force? By having a higher vision. What is my goal? My goal is New York. Here and there, I'm not going to. So when my goal is the Lord, the self, then that goal should be constantly kept in mind. Yes, if you meet a friend, you may spend a day or two, but do not get so sidetracked for 2 weeks, a month. So similarly, on the spiritual path, Not that you can't eat or you have to be completely like a saint, but my goal is clear. Anything that's taking me away from the goal, I have to avoid. And the best way to reduce vasanas is by karma yoga, by service. But how did I get vasanas? How did I get desire? By wrong contact. Like I contact some object, like a cup of coffee or a drink, alcohol or something. One day it's okay. I start one day, then the second day I want, then the third day I want, the fourth day I want. Soon as I get hooked, without my cup of coffee, I'm no use. Without my drink at night, I'm no use. So it starts with one day and then slowly builds up. And so any desire, it could be a desire for money, it could be a desire for power, it could be a desire for passion, it could be a desire for a position. But sooner or later, that desire becomes so strong that I do wrong things to acquire, and that strengthens my vasanas, my selfish desire. So how do I reduce? By karma yoga, by right contact. Because wrong contact built up the vasana, so right contact. That means I do activities unselfishly, not for me or mine, but dedicated to the Lord. And not what is in it for me, but what I can give back to society. So I work with that attitude. That is called karma yoga. And do what is right without worrying about the result. As long as I do the right thing, the result will be good. So working with the right attitude, with the right contact, working unselfishly, dedicating my activities to the Lord and working for Him is the surest way to reduce vasanas. Vasanas were increased by desire. They can be undone also. You cannot say, oh, I always have had this vasana. I always had this desire. I can do nothing about it. No, if I built up my vasanas, I can undo them. So it is up to me to decide that this is not conducive to my spiritual growth. And what we will find that when I do not know who I am and I think I am this limited individual, this body, mind and intellect, then all my efforts are spent in satisfying the body for its pleasures, the mind for its pleasures, the intellect for acquisition of knowledge. And after a few years, you realized I wasted my time. I spent so many years of my life in pursuit of these objects or things or people or position or power or money. And yeah, we need all those. You need a job, you need power, you need position, money. But when that becomes the overwhelming goal of life, that I must have it, then that becomes an obstacle. And sooner or later, after a certain number of years when you have spent in this pursuit, and one day you sit back and say, oh, look, what have I done with my life? I'm already 60 years old. I'm already 65, 70. Most of my life is gone. And then you meet a teacher who tells you what the right thing is. And you say, I wish I had met this person earlier so I could have changed my life. But they say, no time is a bad time. Anytime you get this knowledge, you take it up. And even though you may have wasted your years and this pursuit, even though you have not reached, but at least now you have started. At least they say, there aya, saber aya, there aya. At least he came. At least he has come on this path. And once you are on this path, then if you are sincere, if your focus is strong, if your persons who are very successful in the world and have accomplished a lot, when they turn their mind to spirituality, they are equally adept at accomplishing a lot if they become focused. Because a person who can focus and become successful in the world knows what it takes to achieve success. So if that same knowledge, the same energy, the same focus, when he turns towards God, towards spirituality, then he or she can do the same thing. So one has to take the examples of saints, how single-mindedly they pursued that. And a lot of them came from very humble circumstances, had very poor, you know, families, didn't have much money, had so many obstacles, problems. But their goal was clear. I have to know God. I have to reach God, no matter what obstacles come. So that's what is very important. My goal should be clear. My vision should be up. My vision should be up, not low. I should not lower myself. I should go higher. Because to fall down is very easy. To go up is very difficult, like in the stairs. To come down the stairs is easy, but to go up the stairs is difficult. Somebody says, climb to the sixth floor, I can't do it. But walking down, I don't mind. So similarly, in spirituality, rising is difficult, falling is very easy. So one has to be careful. And so this is the different obstacles that can come. And I hope I have been able to cover this. This is covered in the book. I just gave a few extra points. You're welcome to read the book, and it will kind of strengthen that. And also, of course, you can listen to the talk online again. So any questions, any comments? Yes.
What does karma yoga mean?
Karma yoga means, karma means action. Yoga means joined with the Lord. Yoga comes from yuj, you to unite. So actions, uniting yourself with the Lord. So actions dedicated to the Lord, performed unselfishly, without regard for the fruit, what is in it for me? So actions done for others, unselfishly, dedicated to the Lord, without I and my, is karma yoga. And doing what is the right thing without worrying about what the result will be. As long as I'm doing the right thing, the result will be good. So karma is action, yoga is united. So actions united with the Lord. Yoga comes from yuj. Yuj means to unite. So that is karma yoga. So actions dedicated to God.
So you pointed out, you know, distraction, you know, even doing your prayer or meditating routine you have, and then one day what happened is that, I'll have a cup of tea before. And then what happened, the cup of tea, you end up of something else you need to be doing, and then you get to start doing that, and then what happened, and then I just look at myself, you fool, and this has happened one day, and then after I done that, I go to my room, there's where I have special area where I do my prayer and to, you know, sit down. My goodness, what time is now? And it's like 10 o'clock. And that, so the next day, my mind says, go and have a cup of tea. And I want to get out of bed. No, I'm not going to do it. You know, really, it's amazing that you
right.
do what you leave one day, and then the next day, your mind says, go on, have a cup of tea, you know, like get up and do that. The moment you get out of bedroom and you go and do and pain, as I said, you get so distracted.
Right.
You want to do this, you want to do that.
Exactly.
It is so, you know, common and so weird that how
right.
the mind takes you.
Mm-hmm.
And I find to bring to mind to be with a focus, jhapa, you know, like you can say, Vaheguru, you know, so.
Chanting the name of Lord.
Chanting the name of the Lord. It is, that is so amazing that that only helps you. It's really great. And it calms you. And you feel so at peace after you have done it.
Right.
And you feel energized too.
Mm-hmm.
You feel energized.
Exactly.
By chanting the name of the Lord.
Right. No, I think tea, sorry, you want to answer her question. Tea is a problem because tea stimulates the mind. See, caffeine, your idea in meditation is to quieten the mind. So if you have a cup of tea, that will stimulate your mind. And then it will, like you said, once you get out of the bedroom, you will remember, do this, put away the dishes or empty the dishwasher. So, or find the newspaper and start reading. So yes, do not get out of your room till you have done your meditation, because tea definitely stimulates the mind, and so avoid that. So get up in the morning, at the most you may want to use the restroom, wash your face, brush your teeth, and then sit down to meditate right as soon as you have got up.
I don't even open a bedroom door.
Yes, shouldn't.
I don't. And if I do, I get distracted.
Then you get distracted. So meditation should be the first thing you do.
I was in
Delhi, I was talking to my brother-in-law. He says he goes for a walk in the morning and then he comes back and then he meditates. I said no, because that long walk through the park, it's good for you physically, but it's taking your mind out. I said, meditate first and then go for your walk. So meditation should be the first thing you do. Do not open the TV. Do not pick up the newspaper. Do not go to the kitchen. Just stay in your bedroom. Yeah, go ahead. You had a question.
I suspect I have a pretty narrow idea of what right contact would be and how you would pursue it. Could you just expand on that?
Sure, sure. So wrong contact is through desire, desire-prompted activities. When I do something for desire, I want more. And I want more. And if I don't get it, I get angry. If I get it, I get greedy. And then I get hooked and I get addicted. So desire-prompted activities lead to wrong contact. And then if I don't get it, I get angry, I get delusion, all that. But when the right contact means that doing what needs to be done without I and my. So I do the same action, but I do it without I and my. It's an unselfish action. So that is called right contact. And right contact will not lead to more vasanas. In fact, will reduce your vasanas. When you do unselfish activities dedicated to the Lord, I'm working for Him. Even if I'm doing a job, obviously I'm going to get a salary. So it's not that you don't work for a salary. But at this moment, when I'm on my desk doing my job, I do my best without regard of who the customer is. I take best care of that person. I do the best I can. I give them an honest deal and be honest. So doing what is right without worrying about me and my is right contact. The example they give, of course, nowadays we have electronic cameras. So these are all the old examples that you have, you know, in the olden days, you know, they had a shutter, camera had a shutter. So you click the shutter and it would take a picture on the photographic roll, if you remember that. And then we used to take the roll and take it to the camera shop and they would develop the roll. Now the roll has a black photographic paper, which has silver on it. And so when the light is exposed to the light for a second, the shutter, the image comes, gets printed upon the roll. And then that image, when you take it to the Photoshop, they can process it and make it into a picture. I'm talking about the good old days. But suppose instead of the black paper, you have a plain white paper and you expose it. Nothing will happen. The white paper will not take the image. But a black photographic paper, which is designed to pick up images, will pick it up. So similarly, our mind, when it is trained to pick up external things, attachments. When I'm attached to something, I plus I want. The moment I see it, the desire arises. I want it. I want it. So that is the black paper. The moment it sees something, it holds on to it. The white paper is, I used to be attached, but now if it comes or doesn't come, I'm fine. So the right contact is not depending on I plus I want, but I'm happy with what I have. And I do not depend on anything to make me happy. So that is the white paper. No matter what comes in front, the person is not that he's like a stone or a rock, but he is not affected by desires, by vasana. So right contact is contacting the same world. One is with I and my, and one is with the servant of the Lord without selfishness. So that is right contact. Like the photographic picture, paper is the best example.
Change yourself from the white paper to the black paper.
No, from the black paper to the white paper.
So nothing, you can't attract.
So the black paper picks up everything and it gets attached.
Okay.
So the white paper is unattached.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So where objects may come, but I don't need them to make myself happy because I have the Lord that. So where a person is white, it does not mean you become a stone or rock and you walk through and not like that. It's not that you don't enjoy life or have fun, but everything should be within moderation, controlled, and should not take me away from my path. Of course, it's okay to have fun and watch a TV and movie once in a while, but that should not become my main profession, having fun and joy and take me away from the spiritual path. So the black paper is that get attached. Friends say, come on, let's go have a drink. You have a drink. Let's go here. Let's go there. A white paper says, it's okay, but now is my time to meditate, or it's my time for this class, or it's my time to study. So I won't. Like we tell our children, you know, near the exam time, even if a friend calls you for a movie, tell him no. That's the white paper. The friend wants to go. Kid will say, oh, my friend is calling. Can I go, mom? Mom says, no, you have finals next week. You have to sit and study. So that is the white paper. The friends will call. But if you go with the friend, whoever calls, okay, let's go, then you are the black paper. Whatever calls, you get attached to it. Good. So that's the white paper, that the invitations come, but you...
Right contact.
Right contact, yes. The black paper would say, okay, friends are calling, let's go. But if you have a higher purpose in mind, a higher vision, and if my goal is New York, I'm not going to get sidetracked.
Yeah, I said, you know what, I am going to go and...
Good.
In strong, have willpower, and not carried away with that.
Yes.
Sort of,
yeah, so that is right contact. See, we can lower the bars. Eyes closed. Back erect, but not stiff. Relax the body from head to toe. And back from toes to the head. Pay attention to each part. Sit with an attitude of surrender. Lord, you are doing everything. Please help me in my journey. By myself, I cannot reach you. So please be with me as I meditate. Attitude of surrender is very important. At this moment, I'm neither a man or a woman, nor a doctor or an engineer or a lawyer or a nurse. I'm a seeker of truth. I'm neither a Hindu or Muslim or Christian or Sikh. I'm a seeker of truth. Take slow, deep breaths and mentally chant Om as you breathe out. Deep breaths in and out. When the mind runs out, turn the attention of the mind inward. Try to contact the Lord within. They say, rest the mind in the self. The mind, instead of running here and there or thinking of thoughts, is centered on the Lord presence within. And at that time, there is only one understanding. I am that infinite self. I'm not this body. I'm not this mind. I'm not the intellect. But I am that pure divinity. So control the mind's wandering by deep breaths and by chanting Om. Turn the mind, attention inward and leave it in contact with the Lord's presence within. Because that divinity that is in me is my real nature. I am that. Let us stay with that attitude for a few minutes.